music in the 50s and stuff, when songs were pretty much all about love or sex disguised as love or whatever. But I love those kind of lyrics, you know. I love all the really, I guess maybe what some people would think of as being real, like, corny or whatever. I love those kind of lyrics. And I, as an exercise, sometimes I do try to write something that doesn't have any surreal talk in it. You'll hear some in the future. But a lot of the time, it seems like they're more sad songs about that I know I can't go through with this relationship, things like that. But they are very direct and to somebody in that way. But the love songs, the songs that ended up being directed at girlfriends are like one girlfriend, the song Running Away Into You on my first solo record. I always thought of that as being a song to her, and my last girlfriend, the song Every Person, I thought of as being to her. But a lot of the time, that's not what the whole song amounts to. Because at the same time, that's not really what your feelings about somebody amount to. They're not really about just that person. They're about things going on inside of yourself. They're about your whole life leading up to that point. Your feelings about a person are never really the whole picture. So I guess that's why I wouldn't want to write a whole song just about my feelings on one person in that one-dimensional way. To me, if you bring other concepts into the same song, you're actually giving a more complete image of your feelings for that person anyways. And then the other question from that person is, John, do you think that dedicating your life to making music is enough? Well, that's the only thing that I'm good at, so that's really, whether it's enough or not, it's all I can really do. But, you know, I don't think that that's all I do. For instance, I think that, you know, my friendships with the people who I'm friends with, hopefully I bring something nice into their life that has nothing to do with the fact that I play music, but it's just because I'm here, and I'm myself, and I'm who I am. And so, and I know that my friends, that's how they affect me. My friend Josh Klinghoffer, my friend Omar Rodriguez, if they didn't play music at all, if it was just our friendship alone, hold on, the phone's ringing. So even if my friends, you know, just our friendship alone, it makes a big difference to me in my life. And, but it seems like I'm closest to people when we have that connection with music as well. I guess you're talking about the possibility of, you know, dedicating my life to some sort of a spiritual quest or something, but, for me, music is that, you know. For me, music's the closest to that I'm capable of or really feel like is my calling. I mean, I feel like what I'm doing with music does other things besides just people buy the music and they hear it. I feel like just the creation of music does things to other planes of existence that, though we're not aware of them here, we're interacting with them all the time, and so I think the people who make music are creating worlds out there and things like that. And so and helping, you know, you have certain factions of spirits and things like that who are working for certain causes, and you have other ones working for other causes, just like you do here on the planet, where some people are working for beauty and some people are working for money. And I think you have spirits, you know, doing the same, what's the equivalent of the same thing in their realm. And so I just think the more powerful the people who are really living their lives to make something beautiful, the more of us that there are and the more beautiful what we make is, the more powerful those spirits are. And that's really, like, for me, that's the biggest part of my reasons for making music here, you know. It's definitely not, you know, to make myself successful or something. It's because my understanding of those realms was put into me during the 5 years that I wasn't doing anything, and I was made to see what's going on out there very clearly, and I just know how important it is for all of them out there who have helped me so much for me to keep creating as much as I can. So I'm just trying to do the best I can at it. And for me to keep my life simple and focused on one thing like that is the best thing I can do. There would be no point to, you know, devoting myself to skiing or, you know, any other kind of physical activity or any other profession or anything. For me, music is the spiritual quest anyways. This question is, do you ever listen to the band Phish? I still haven't heard them, but I met their guitar player, who was really nice. I'm forgetting his name now, but if I wasn't so lazy, I'd go over to my address book and look it up, because I know I've still got his phone number. They seem really cool, you know. That I know he was telling me that they did the whole Talking Heads album Remain in Light live, and they do that here and there, like they'll play a whole album. He said they played the Velvet Underground Loaded album, and I thought that seemed really cool. It seemed really fun to do and fun to witness, and I certainly love the idea of people just going up there and jamming for long periods of time. It seemed like a really fun existence those guys have, and I've been, you know, when he sparked my curiosity in it, but I hadn't really thought about it that much since then. But I suppose I should buy, he told me I should buy one of their live albums if I was to hear them, which I'm sure I'll do one of these days soon. I really liked him as a guy, he was really nice. And then the other question is, do you see the Chili Peppers or yourself getting deeper into improvisational territory? We definitely have in the, you know, like for instance, on the Californication tour, we had just started doing like sort of real noisy sort of endings for shows. The first couple that we even did, we released as B-sides of End of Show Brisbane and End of Show State College. And, you know, it was, and then on the By the Way tour, we really started getting deep into that, sometimes improvising as much as like 50 minutes, 50 minutes at the end of performances. And, you know, we throw little improvisations into the show, but with us, there's kind of a balance that we have to have, because Anthony, while he is definitely one of the few singers that really does improvise with us, you know, a lot of singers have a hard time improvising words and stuff, and he's really good at it, you know, but I guess, you know, especially when it comes to improvising where there's soloing and a lot of intense interaction rather than repeating a groove, when the improvisation is constantly changing, sometimes it starts to become more instrumentally oriented, and at which point Anthony starts. Whoa! Fuck. Sorry, I won't explain what just happened, but that was just a real crisis. But it's all right now. Oh God. So, what was I saying? Yeah, so Anthony is, so it's just something that we have to, you know, find a middle ground for, you know. you know, improvisation is the whole way that our music comes about. And so, you know, and it's something that, I would say all four of us are, you know, are really deeply into. But, and as far as doing it on stage, we do it a lot, but to do it to the degree that someone like Fish does it, see, Fish doesn't have a lead vocalist from what I remember from my conversations with that guy. They all play instruments, and a number of them sing. So in Anthony's case, while we're improvising, he has to just be kind of standing around waiting. And for him, he starts to kind of lose his flow from just standing around. He does support us by dancing and things like that, but there's only so much a guy can do before he starts to feel like he's not really part of what's going on. So that's the difference in a band like Fish. They all play instruments, so they all have that. Nobody's left out when there's no vocal. And you know, improvisational music is largely about being instrumental. Even if you have a vocalist who can improvise, it's, you wouldn't want to just hear that for a whole hour or whatever. Whereas, you know, instrumental music can go on for 3 hours and it's great, you know. So that's the answer to that. This person asks, did you have a guitar teacher? Oh, this person's name is John Orme. Did you have a guitar teacher when you were younger? And how long did you have lessons? They say, I want to be a guitarist, but I don't think I'm going the right way about it. Well, for a while I just sort of bounced from guitar teacher to guitar teacher, never really feeling like I'd found the right one. Because we wouldn't share the same opinions on things, you know. I think my first guitar teacher told me that Joe Pass was better than Jeff Beck. And I thought, I'd never heard of Joe Pass, but I said, I said, better than Jeff Beck. Wow, I didn't think anybody was better than Jeff Beck. And then I saw a picture of Joe Pass, and I realized, like, all right, this guy's not better than Jeff Beck, or this guy's just speaking on a different level than the way I'm thinking of music, because for me, music had a lot to do with the excitement of rock, and this guy was talking about a jazz guitarist. So, I might have had a guitar lesson just before that, who, the guy just didn't know punk at all, and punk was the main thing that I was into, so I only had one lesson from him. And then I had another teacher who, he seemed to know, like, I guess he liked Yes, and I liked Yes a lot. And so he knew how to play a few Steve Howe things or something, but he also didn't like punk. So I had a few lessons from him, but he just wasn't good for me all the way around. Then I met this guy named Mark, who he had played in a band that Nina Hagen had that she broke up shortly there, before they ever went out on tour or recorded anything. But Pat Smear, the guitarist of the Germs, was also in this lineup with him. He played, so this guy played guitar with Pat Smear at one point, which to me was a very impressive credential, even if they hadn't actually ever made a record or anything like that. The fact that he thought Pat was a good guitarist for me automatically, like, made him really cool. And then he had made all these recordings that I really liked at the time. His full name was Mark Medcalf. And I guess he's made recordings under the name Mark Nine. I've never followed any of his recordings. I liked what he had done, these demos that he had done around that time when I was taking lessons around 1983-84. And he was really a good teacher, and a lot of the time lessons would consist of me asking questions like, how does Jimi Hendrix get this really high feedback right here, or how does a recording studio work, or what does a sequencer do, or he would answer all these questions. And he was actually the first person who ever brought me up on stage. We played his band Underworld, not the same Underworld that's called Underworld nowadays, but he had a band called a sort of a psychedelic, a modern psychedelic band, I guess I would call them, called Underworld, and they played a gig at the Lhasa Club in Hollywood and or in LA somewhere, and I played guitar on one song, and it was a real, I was 14 years old, and I really got, you know, it was a real song a guitarist could sink his teeth into, because it started out with these real sort of soft ambient parts, and then it built to, it was a 60s song called Mr. Blue, and a psychedelic song, and then it had like fast punk part, like a part that sped up to punk rock speed, and then broke down into like real slow feed, you know, real slow drums with me doing lots of feedback and stuff, and there was like two long guitar solos, and it was really a great way to start out performing, and I just looked up to him a great deal, and he kept raising the price of lessons, so eventually my mom said we didn't have the money to pay for it anymore, and then he was kind of, when I joined the band, he gave me his advice on what was wrong with my playing when he saw me live, without me really asking him what was wrong with it, or, you know, he started like acting like we were in the middle of a lesson, and it was kind of weird because he auditioned for the Chili Peppers when I was 14, and he didn't get into the band, and I did get into the band, but he was telling me how I should play, and I just thought, I just resented that, and I haven't spoken to him since, but, and I don't really speak about him much in interviews, because I just thought he was such a jerk that, you know, why should I, like, give him props, but he actually was a really good teacher, and if you would have asked me about him when I was 14, I would have said he was the living end, you know, I just loved him, and his opinions meant everything to me, and I thought of him as being one of my favorite guitarists and all that, I think it's great if you can find a guitar teacher who's really, who really thinks along the same lines as you in general, or who you really respect, not only as a teacher, but as a musician. I think if you're lucky enough to find somebody like that, it can really help. Otherwise, I think it's good to just bounce from teacher to teacher, you know. I think, even though I was sad when I had to stop taking lessons from him, I made a certain I learned a lot just from not only from teaching myself things and trying to just motivate myself to learn things. Like, I actually spent a couple of years just focusing on the stuff that he had taught me, just learning it better, just getting it deeper into my head. I think I probably learned more from the lessons I took with him after I stopped taking lessons from him than before, because I still had all the pieces of paper, and I just went deeper into the information and started applying it more. But even if you don't find a teacher that you like, if you find somebody who can at least show you, if you want to go this direction, if somebody who can show you, chord theory and explain how what the intervals are and maybe even, you know, understanding how to read music, to see the way music is written on page really, I think is a real healthy thing for your brain, you know. Even if you don't sight read on your instrument, to at least understand the way that music can be translated into a written language is really helpful. For instance, Flea, he knew how to read music on the trumpet from when he was a little kid, but he just never actually sat there and read any music on his bass. But the fact that he knew how music was written would help us in our songwriting a lot, because when we're explaining rhythms to each other, we can say, you know, it's a dotted eighth note followed by a quarter note or something. You know, we can we can speak that way to make our ideas more cemented into each other's heads, and it just helps. It's the language of music, so it helps to know how to write it, you know. You can also, you know, I also think that it can be just as good to go the other route and to not learn things from a theoretical standpoint, but to just learn things based on feeling them and based on learning things by ear and things like that. For me, that's just, for me, that the kind of guitar player I wanted to be, I wanted to just be able to have no limitations. I wanted to be able to do whatever I wanted to do, whatever I was interested in doing. So for me, that meant being able to do all these things, reading music, as well as knowing theory, as well as learning things by ear, as well as just playing by feeling. You know, it's always playing by feelings, but a lot of the time I think the understanding theory and all these things can help you get all these ideas out quicker. For instance, if you were making up a harmony part to something, if you played guitar, yeah, you can just go by feel, whatever that would mean. For me, I automatically know where the third is and where the fifth is, and for me, making a harmony to something is pretty much just following the dots. It's not, I don't have to depend on luck, and I don't have to depend on, somebody who plays by feel, when they're coming up with things like harmonies, they're depending on kind of luck, and I just don't like to leave it in the hands of that. For me, luck is going to be like whether the whole thing is good or not, but not whether I'm capable of coming up with a harmony. For me, it really helps to automatically know, you know, where the next harmony goes and where the one higher than that goes and where the one higher than that goes. And I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't know theory. So I recommend that strongly. And I also just recommend spending your time just trying to learn things by ear. And that means starting with whatever's the simplest kind of music that you really like, whether it's, you know, the Ramones or the Bay City Rollers or, the Shags or something, whatever the simplest thing is that you like, that's the stuff you should be figuring out first, and you should, you know, gradually work your way up to eventually being able to learn the most complex things that you like, and I highly recommend evenly dividing your time between these different practices, whether it's